Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 419 for April 6th, 2013. Coming up in a few minutes.
I never believe it's a good thing to have bubbles, but what I do think, it's very important to have very good solid growth, and I am very confident that we're going to get that.
The Scotch Whiskey Association announced its final 2012 export numbers this week, with a narrowing of the gains seen during the previous several years. I caught up with SWA Chief Executive Gavin Hewitt at the World Whiskies Conference this week in New York, and we talked about those numbers and several other key issues facing the Scotch whiskey industry, including minimum pricing and next year's Scottish independence referendum. That's coming up later on WhiskeyCast In Depth. I'll also have the calendar of events and the What I'm Tasting This Week department, all on this week's episode of WhiskeyCast.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Let's start off with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. While Scotch export sales appear to be slowing right now, the industry is still projecting global demand to keep rising in the coming decades. Diageo announced nearly $100 million in expansion projects this week, including the final choice of sites for what will be its largest malt whiskey distillery yet. The world's largest whiskey maker will build that new distillery on a site next to the Tiananic Distillery near Alness in the Highlands, with a capacity of around 13 million liters of spirit each year. The Rose Isle Distillery Diageo opened 2 years ago produces around 10 million liters a year. Diageo's Nick Morgan told me the new distillery could be online 2 years from now.
That means we now go through a planning process with the local authority, so it's not final that that's where it will be built, but we certainly hope that will be the case. And what we've also done this week as well is announced that we're going to expand Tiananic Distillery itself, so that will be almost doubled in size, and we're also going to expand our distillery on Speyside at Mortlach, and again we will almost double that in size as well.
And Mortlach is really important because I know that's used by a lot of blenders and it's used in a lot of the Diageo blends as well, but we've had calls for years to make that more available as a single malt. Will this allow that in the coming years?
Well, the thing about Mortlach and all the other expansions that we've announced, if you actually look at what we've done in this £1 billion investment program and the investment before that with expansion at Killila and Glenord, what we're doing is gradually building up every aspect of the blender's taste profile palette that they work with. So the work at Mortlach, the work at Glenord, at Killila, is all about creating inventory to meet the demand which we see coming forward for blended Scotch whiskey from all around the world. And of course, we're not talking about tomorrow, we're not even necessarily talking about 5 years hence, we're talking about 10, 15, 20 years.
But this theoretically would make some Mortlach, more, at least more of it available for single malt bottling, correct?
Well, I think at the moment we bottle about 800 cases, so if we double the size of Mortlach, that means there might be 1600 cases available. It's all about blends. I mean, I know everyone loves single malts, and Mortlach's one of the very, very special ones. You should never lose sight of the fact that it's special because of what it does to blended Scotch whiskey, and that's why the other thing that's really interesting about Mortlach is the length we're going to make sure that what comes out of the expanded Mortlach is going to be exactly the same as the Mortlach that we produce now.
Let's go through that. What do you do when you build a new stillhouse to make it create whiskey that's exactly the same?
Well, insofar as people really do manage to understand what goes on in Mortlach now, and as you know, it's quite a complex sort of 2.7 or 2.8 times distilled process, worm tubs that are managed in a very unusual way as well to condense vapors into spirit. So our engineers and our whiskey making experts have pledged to us that what they are going to do is replicate the entire process in a second stillhouse, in effect. And so the challenge is now down to them. They've said they can do it, so we'll be waiting with bated breath to make sure they can, as will our blenders too.
Now, this was just part of an overall massive expansion project that was announced this week. Not only the new distillery at Tiananic, the Tiananic expansion itself, Mortlach, but Glendolen gets a new biogas plant to help run the distillery. There's increased warehousing capacity. There's production capacity literally all over Scotland, right?
Absolutely. And I think, and also, of course, although not part of the most recent phase, we built a new cooperage, which is one of the pretty critical parts of this operation, which was opened sort of about 18 months ago. So I think in everywhere our production footprint touches in Scotland, we're investing ahead of this demand that we are really very confident seeing coming through over the next 5, 10, 15 years.
What kind of percentages are you expecting in terms of growth?
Well, we think we'll see consistent double-digit growth going forward on an annual basis. I mean, clearly, as the figures that the SWA put out this week, you can always have slight blips on that. There are always particular factors in particular markets that might mean something goes down, something goes up. But when you invest the sort of money that we and other companies are investing at the moment in what is traditionally a very conservative industry, you can be very sure that we believe we've got our numbers right to sustain that growth.
Let's go back to the new distillery for a second. What's the timeline now that you've made a decision on the location for it? What's the timeline for getting it built and getting it up and running?
Well, I think, Mark, that the planning process could be 3 to 6 months. That's not entirely in our hands. That depends how it goes with all the relevant authorities and stakeholders that will need to be consulted as we go through that process. We did build Rose Isle in a year, which is quite remarkable. So I would look at it and say probably within 2 years we should have that new distillery up and in a commissioning phase.
Why the Tiernanaigh site? Why was it the best of the three? I believe the others were Glen Ord and Glendolen.
Yeah, well, I think it was Inchgower and Glendolen that we were looking at.
I stand corrected, Inchgower and Glendolen.
Yeah, yeah. I think all of those sites offered certain advantages. What we had at Tiernanaigh was accessible space. You'll know that we have a maltings just down the road. There's the distillery at Tiernanaigh. There's Glen Ord Distillery. There's also Clynelish Distillery. So there's some synergy there in having those sites all working relatively close to each other. And I don't think it was necessarily as simple as a toss of the coin, but all the sites were very attractive. And in the end, Tiernanaigh, when I think all the factors and criteria were looked at, Tiernanaigh just came out on top.
Tiernanaigh also gets an expansion that will nearly double its capacity, with similar plans at Glen Ord, and a new bioenergy plant for Glendolen Distillery that will use waste from the distillery to produce natural gas to run the boilers. Meanwhile, Dewar's Highlander Honey made its debut Wednesday night at Whiskey Live New York, as expected, but the discussions over its labeling and marketing continue back in Scotland. Dewar's announced plans last month to release the honey-flavored Dewar's Expression in the U.S. only, and at first the Scotch Whiskey Association appeared to be on board with the plan. Scottish law bans any use of flavorings in Scotch whiskey, and Highlander Honey is labeled as a spirit drink, but only on the back label. And the SWA's Gavin Hewitt now has a problem with Highlander Honey.
We are talking to Dewar's very, very concretely about that. We commented before they actually launched it. We were worried about some of the way that the actual labeler was presented and also some of their promotional material. It was also discussed at the highest levels within the Scotch Whisky Association. Dewar's are very happy to listen to our advice, and I think we'll correspond to that advice, and we're making absolutely sure that within the SWA there's a high level discussion about the rules on new products and innovation.
Now, the Dewar's folks told me that they were in consultation with the SWA long before this ever went to market, and the initial press release from the SWA sort of blessed this when it came out, and then all of a sudden a few days later there was a reversal. What happened?
I think there were probably some misunderstandings along the line. We were very clear initially about what we expected. I think there are issues sometimes between what are European rules and what are American rules. I'm trying to get to the bottom of that one, Mark. I think there's something about TTB labeling and our own labeling rules, and we must make sure that they're not incompatible, and that we must make sure that it's an absolutely legitimate to have a flavored product based on a whiskey product like Scotch, just as Red Stag or whatever it may be. But we must make absolutely plain that it is not whiskey. And it's essential, therefore, to underline that once you actually put a flavoring in, it ceases to be whiskey, because that's what the definition of whiskey is.
Would it have been easier for you had they put spirit drink on the front label instead of just putting Scotch whiskey infused with Highland honey?
That was our advice.
Dewar's has issued a statement indicating that it believes Highlander honey is legal since it complies with all requirements in the U.S. market. The Maker's Mark ABV controversy earlier this year doesn't appear to have affected sales so far. That's according to Beam's North American president, Bill Newlands. He was the keynote speaker at the World Whiskies Conference, and while he did not address it during his presentation, I had the chance to ask during the Q&A session that followed whether there has been an impact on sales, and just who made the decisions to change the ABV of Makers and reverse it a week later.
That's obviously been an interesting little start to our year, to say the least. We did what we thought was an important approach to that, which was we didn't have enough product to meet the growth. You saw on one of the slides, we grew 15%. Now, we have plenty of growth available in that brand, so let's not assume that we don't have growth in the brand, but we didn't have liquid laid down in the near term to meet the need and the demand that's occurring. The demand in this country is exploding, and the demand worldwide is exploding for Maker's Mark, which is a tremendous statement for Makers. Our belief was we needed to try to find a way to offer the consumer more supply. What the consumer said to us loud and clear is, we disagree with you. And I think that's a real testament to how our company operates, because it took us less than a week to say the consumer has spoken and we are going to listen. What that means is we will have some challenges in the future. We have great amounts of supply. We've made massive investments to build greater supply at Maker's Mark for the future. But we will probably have some short-term tightness in that brand. But let's face it, the consumer wins. If you listen to the consumer, I just got done talking about listening to the consumer, and the consumer spoke, and the consumer said that we recognize the attempt to try to give us more product, and we'd prefer to have it be tight on occasion rather than making a change to the core brand. Quite honestly, I don't think it's going to affect Maker's Mark one iota. Our initial understanding from the marketplace is that Maker's is as popular as ever, and the response that we had for listening to the consumer was even greater than the response that we got for making the change. So we're as bullish on Maker's Mark as we've ever been. I wouldn't do it again, however.
Back on February 19th, Maker's Mark Chief Operating Officer Rob Samuels and Chairman Emeritus Bill Samuels Jr. announced that their decision a week earlier to lower the bottling strength of Maker's from 45% ABV down to 42% would be reversed immediately following consumer protests. Let's talk about new whiskeys now. Jim Beam will be releasing an unusual bourbon for visitors to the American Stillhouse Visitors Center at the Jim Beam Distillery in Kentucky. Jim Beam Distiller's masterpiece is unusual because it's finished in wine casks, according to Beam's Adam Harris.
It's kind of a way for us to give people an Easter egg for coming down to the distillery to say it's a Jim Beam bourbon that is finished with the addition of a little bit of a PX sherry cask for several months afterwards. And it's got a nice, big, robust flavor. I had the chance to try it last time I was down, and we think it's going to be great. It's just kind of the beginning of a series that we plan on featuring at the distillery, where people that get a chance to come down can take away a little piece of something special that's not available on an open market, per se.
Distiller's Masterpiece will go on sale the first Saturday in May, which just happens to be Kentucky Derby Day. Last time around, I mentioned the Four Roses Secretariat Limited Edition Bourbon that honors the 40th anniversary of Secretariat's Triple Crown and Kentucky Derby record. It'll be available at the end of this month in time for the Derby, along with another April tradition, the limited edition Four Roses Single Barrel Bourbon. The official announcement hasn't been made yet on this year's release, but Jim Rutledge of Four Roses gave us a sneak preview.
We'd selected the recipe that we're using probably early October, and I've been traveling a lot the last few weeks, and our quality manager said, we really need you to approve these barrels. We have a tasting panel. They'd all approve. They smell them. Some people taste, some don't. I'm about the only one that it's going to be bottled at barrel strength. You got to taste them at barrel strength. And so I swallow each one. I approve the 64 barrels. We don't need 64 barrels, but some of those may be very low. So they were just approved about 3 weeks ago. It's an OESK, and every barrel's unique. It's on its own. It has its own unique flavor characteristics, but they're all very close to each other. And it's a nice spiciness with the K yeast in combination with the 20% rye that's used in that mash bill. And nutmeg, cinnamon, there's some chocolate finishes. It's a wonderful selection of barrels.
By the way, Jim was inducted into Whiskey Magazine's Hall of Fame Thursday at the World Whiskies Conference, along with Jimmy Russell of Wild Turkey. Jimmy's getting ready for two grand openings this summer, a new bottling hall, and later, a new visitor's center.
It's come along pretty well. It'll be probably the middle of summer. Our bottling facilities, we're aiming to start our first line up the 1st of June. You know, we built a new big bottling facilities, too. So it should be ready in operation, the first line, the 1st of June.
What will the new visitor's center have that the old one didn't have?
A lot more space. It's going to look like an old tobacco barn. You know, Kentucky's famous for their tobacco barns. And you'll be sitting out over on that point of the Kentucky River looking at the two bridges and the Kentucky River. When you sit in the tasting room, that's the view you'll be getting. So it's a beautiful view to be sitting in and watching.
And ready midsummer in time for the Bourbon Festival in the fall, right?
I hope so. Yeah, that's what we're planning on. Yeah, we're planning on, right now we're shooting to have it'll be open for that, but that's when we're planning on having our grand opening about the Bourbon Festival time.
Now, we've talked on the show about the Russell's Reserve single barrel, but tell me about it, because you don't release many single barrels.
Well, this is the only second one we've ever released. We have the Kentucky Spirit that we've had out for many, many years, and now we released the Russell's Reserve. We had the Russell's small batch. Now we got the Russell's Reserve single barrel.
What's unique about this one besides it's a stronger proof, if I remember right,
yes,
right?
It's 110 proof. It's about cask strength. It's not cask strength, but it's about cask strength.
But it's about as strong as the old original Russell's Reserve, right?
No, the original Russell's was 101.
Okay.
But this is 110, so excellent product. It has got a good... Most people swears up and down it's not that strong. They don't think it's that strong, the flavor and all. When you're doing a blind taste and they say, can't be 110 proof, so that's good. I enjoy when they don't get to burn and all, they say, so...
And you'll find my tasting notes for that Russell's Reserve single barrel at the WhiskeyCast website. Now, it's Final Four weekend for college basketball fans, and while the University of Kentucky didn't get a chance to defend last year's national championship, the University of Louisville is the number one seed in this year's tournament and plays Wichita State Saturday night for a spot in the championship game Monday night against either Michigan or Syracuse. It's customary for mayors to make a small wager with each other before big games like this, and Louisville Mayor Greg Fisher has a bet going with Wichita Mayor Carl Brewer. Now, Fisher is getting some help from the Kentucky Distillers Association with his end of the wager, according to the KDA's Eric Gregory.
Well, in Kentucky, we love our basketball, and both the Louisville men's and women's teams are in the Final Four. So the Louisville mayor has put up a fully stocked Kentucky Bourbon Trail bar against the Wichita, Kansas mayor. So if Louisville gets beat, he's got to send this great bourbon bar to Wichita. If Louisville wins, he gets back about $500 worth of premium steaks.
And this has really got to kill you being from UK country, right?
UK is my alma mater. I do bleed blue. But, you know, if UK can't win, I want to see Kentucky pull, or I want to see the Commonwealth pull through. So go Cards. I'm rooting for them all the way.
We're going to save this. Use it as a ringtone. We'll make this available on the website to any Louisville fan that wants to hear Eric Gregory say go Cards, because I think it's the only time you're ever going to say it, right?
We love Louisville. They're big supporters of bourbon. We have a rich history there. And, you know, it's a great thing about our Commonwealth that we've got two of the most premier basketball teams in the country. We take it seriously. The fans take it seriously. But when they're not playing each other, you pull for the other one. So we're very happy to be supporting the Cards.
Louisville's women's team is also in the Final Four and plays California on Sunday. Fisher has a similar bet going with Berkeley Mayor Tom Bates, who's putting up a case of California Cabernet against Fisher's KDA Bourbon Bar. And finally, congratulations to our good friend Dave Broom. He's been announced this weekend as the winner of this year's Communicator of the Year by the International Wine and Spirits Competition. The award is being presented at the Vinitaly Wine and Spirits Expo in Italy. It's only the second time the award has gone to someone from the spirits sector. Richard Patterson of White & Mackay was also on this year's shortlist. You can keep up with the latest whiskey news all week long at the WhiskeyCast website. But for now, that's the week's news.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie. Help us select the next Glenmorangie single malt whiskey with the Glenmorangie Caskmasters project. Sign up online through the Glenmorangie Facebook page or on glenmorangie.com.
Before we get to your voice, just a few quick notes. First off, congratulations to Jared Falavka of San Diego, California. He was selected at random from all of the registered members at WhiskeyCast.com to receive a signed copy of Fred Noe's memoir, Beam Straight Up. I'll be sending that out right away, and we'll be giving away a print from the WhiskeyCast photo gallery to another registered member at the end of April. Thanks to everyone who said hi the other night at Whiskey Live New York. We also gathered a tasting panel for April's episode of WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings that night. Look for that on the web soon. I mentioned last month that I was on the judging panel for the American Distilling Institute's annual competition for craft distillers. The results were announced this week at the ADI conference in Denver. Congratulations to Ballast Point Spirits, which won Best of Class among whiskeys for its Devil's Share Malt Whiskey. You'll find a complete list of medal winners in the news section at WhiskeyCast.com. Finally, I'm looking forward to next month's Spirit of Toronto Festival, May 11th, where I'll be presenting a tasting session. I refuse to use the term masterclass. Tickets for the festival are on sale now, but I'm somewhat flattered to note that the tickets for my session sold out in just a couple of hours. I hope I live up to everyone's expectations. Now, let's get to your voice, brought to you this week by Highland Park. One final note, I'm off to Highland Park this week for a quick visit. More from Orkney next time around. Benjamin Herrera asked on our Facebook page whether I'll be in Chicago later this month for all of the events around Whiskey Fest in Chicago. Sorry to say that I won't be there. Benjamin had this response along with a sad face icon. One of these days I would love to sit down and shoot the breeze over some whiskey with you, sometime soon. Keep up the great work and have fun at Whiskey Life. Looking forward to hearing about it. Thanks, Benjamin. That sounds like a fun time. I'll have to get out to Chicago one of these days and take you up on that. Now, I had a request for some help this week from Andrew Cravata. Here's what he wants to know. I've come across some blended scotch from the 50s and 60s and was wondering if you could help me get any information on it. In particular, who made this whiskey and, if possible, what single malts were blended in with this batch? It's a private bottling for the Chicago Club and appears to have been bottled by J.G. Thompson & Company, except for one square bottle that says Samuel Dow Limited. I have 12 of the standard-shaped bottles and just one of the square. Any ideas? I'm not very familiar with blended scotch. I've attached some photos. Not sure if you'll be able to help, but I figured you'd be the person to ask. Well, Andrew, I've posted the photos on our WhiskeyCast in-depth page at the website, and if anyone knows anything about these whiskeys, please share it with us and help answer Andrew's question. If there's anything else you'd like to share with whiskey lovers around the world, you can always post it in the Your Voice section of the WhiskeyCast website, or on our Facebook page, or you can always email me. My address is comments@whiskeycast.com. And this week's Your Voice segment is brought to you by Highland Park.
My name is Daryl Haldane, Global Brand Advocate for Highland Park. Go onto our website at highlandpark.co.uk and upload your photo at Inner Circle to have your face on the walls of the Highland Park Distillery.
Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. Lots of events coming up this week. The Brisbane Whiskey Expo is on the 10th in Brisbane, Australia, along with the Whiskey Guild's tasting cruise in Washington, D.C., and a Glenfiddich tasting at Albanach in London. The Maker's Mark Handcraft Festival and Ambassador Day is this coming Saturday, the 13th, at the distillery in Loretto, Kentucky, along with Whiskey Messen, Denmark, the Midlands Whiskey Festival in Stourbridge, England, the second Saturday single malt tasting at the Miner's Delight Inn in Atlantic City, Wyoming, and the Plan of Bourbon Derby Party Class at the Distilled Spirits Epicenter in Louisville. Coming up later in the month, Ian McMillan of Burns Stewart will lead a whiskey tasting at the Wine Chateau in Metuchen, New Jersey, on the 15th. Sam's Needs House of Whiskey in Auckland, New Zealand, has a Glenfarclas tasting on the 17th. Reserve 101 in Houston, Texas, has a Suntory tasting the 24th. And it seems like half the bars in Chicago have something going on during the days leading up to Whiskey Fest, April 26th. You can search for whiskey events in your city or all over the world at the WhiskeyCast website. And our calendar of events is brought to you by Laphroaig. Take a virtual distillery tour at laphroaig.com, and while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Islay.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Barry Crockett, master distiller, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
My family have been involved in the business. My father was the head distiller or master distiller of the old Middleton Distillery, which ceased operation in 1974. In respect of the handing on of the traditional practices, you could really say it was a family operation handing on the skills from one generation to another, particularly in my case. I actually lived on the site of the distillery, so it wasn't just merely the handing on of practices, it was indeed being very much aware from a very young age of the sounds, the aromas, the people who worked in the business. So it is, as it were, a full immersion in the whiskey business.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know Redbreast.
WhiskeyCast In Depth is brought to you by Woodford Reserve. The Scotch Whiskey Association released its 2012 export data this week, and there is some sobering news in the numbers. While Scotch whisky accounts for 80% of annual Scottish food and drink exports and 25% of all UK food and drink exports, the volume of Scotch exports was off by 5% during 2011, while the value of those exports rose by just 1%. SWA Chief Executive Gavin Hewitt and I sat down to talk about the data and other key issues at the World Whiskies Conference Thursday in New York City.
Frankly, that is actually the good news, because it is the value that we actually want to express our whisky in. At long last, we're getting the right sort of prices for the whisky that we're selling, and there's some very attractive increases in the premium, super premium and ultra premium. The audience that's out there are really beginning to go up market and enjoy it.
Which is good for those companies that have the ultra premiums to offer and actually have the stock available to support ultra premiums. Are you running? I know we've talked about this before, but there is a perception in reality of a shortage of Scotch whiskey to satisfy demand, right?
I think I would call the market tight. And I think it's interestingly, it is tight, particularly also at the bottom level. It's a phenomenon happening in Europe at the moment. Some of the supermarkets are wanting to actually put whiskey into the market at a particular price point, and they're no longer being able to actually source whiskey at that price point from Scotch. That tells you that, in fact, my own producers, my own companies, are beginning to actually value the product and make sure that they age it well through to make sure that they have got the stock for the future.
Are you worried about cutbacks in China, cutbacks in Russia? We know the Chinese government has essentially banned luxury entertaining for its government officials, at which Scotch whisky was a part of that. Are you worried about the bubble starting to getting that needle getting close to the bubble and maybe popping it at some point?
I never believe it's a good thing to have bubbles, but what I do think, it's very important to have very good solid growth, and I am very confident that we're going to get that. In Russia, it is not a bubble. It is, frankly, people moving away from white spirit in masses, and we have got a very big way still to go in Russia, although we've done extremely well over the last few years. When I was there last year, they were quoting figures which were astronomical in terms of growth in whiskey, growth in brown spirits. I'm not going to actually sort of quote those because I don't believe them until I see them, but my God, they're encouraging. In China, we're consolidating. I think we've actually got a very interesting part of the market. Remember, it's a very small part, about 1% of the total, but it is white spirits, Chinese white spirits, which I think are going to be largely affected by the Chinese ban on luxurious entertainment.
And 1% of a billion people is still a pretty good market.
I think that's a pretty good market, in a market where indeed people are actually wanting to show who they are, what they are, their new affluence, and indeed that they are global citizens, not just Chinese citizens.
What markets are starting to show increases and improvements that you hadn't seen before? I know Estonia, Latvia were showing increases, but those are largely transit points for the Russian market, right?
Those are indeed very much largely transit points to get the goods into. But that, I think, the very growth you're seeing in Estonia and Latvia and in Germany, which is also a little transit point for Russia, that is good news. We're looking still, frankly, to the United States. It is doing superbly well, in growth of around 15%. This is a billion-dollar market for us at customs valuation. That is an incredible market, and we're still growing. And it's grown by 130% since 10 years ago.
How about South America?
South America, you look at the figures and they fluctuate at the moment, but South America is a very, very strong positive place. Mexico, Brazil was a little drop last year, but that's not to worry us. You have to look at when shipments are made according to the tax rates and when the various things affecting the market take place. That was true also of France last year. But I think we are very, very confident that Latin America is a real growth point because this is they're fascinated by whiskey.
And I wanted to bring in France because that was a bubble this year because of the way the tax rates were calculated in 2011 versus 2012, and a lot of importers and consumers into the French market actually stocked up in 2011 to avoid a tax increase there in 2012.
You've got it absolutely right. 2012 was a remarkable 2011 was a remarkable year for our exports to France. Obviously they fell off because it was a 15% tax increase from the 1st of January 2012. So as sensible Scots, we made sure that the product was in the market before it was taxed wrongly.
Let's talk about taxes for a bit, because the Chancellor just came out with his latest tax change just a week or two ago and gave your colleagues in the beer industry a break while sticking it to spirits and wine yet again, right?
I think we find the Chancellor's approach to Scotch whisky totally incomprehensible. We're one of the industries which is actually doing what the UK government wants, which is exporting to secure our recovery out of recession. The fact that he doesn't recognise that and penalises for exporting effectively and says, no, our home market doesn't account. The UK still represents our third largest market. We cannot afford not to look after that. If the Chancellor chooses to neglect it, I fear that he will lose revenue rather than us. We've got plenty of places to sell it, but the UK market matters to us.
I know Osborne walked into a meeting of the beer wholesalers and the beer distributors and got a standing ovation earlier this week. What would happen if you walked into a Scottish pub these days?
I think you might have a few boos around the place, not least that the Conservatives are not represented very well in Scotland. What we look for is that we hope that the scales fall from his eyes next year and that he'll recognise what it is we have done and what it is we're doing. Do remember that 40% and plus of what is drunk in pubs is not beer. So why on earth do you actually look after beer and not look after the whole of the alcohol industry?
It should be pointed out, though, that one thing the Cameron government did do was decide at least to knock off the idea of minimum pricing in England and Wales, while the Scottish Nationalist Party is and the SNP is still pushing it in Scotland. Was it a good move, in your opinion? I know that the SWA has officially come out against minimum pricing, but at least was that something that made you feel better and made it a little easier to take that tax hike if they take minimum pricing off the table?
It was very interesting because a Conservative government minister came to me and said, are you going to congratulate you? This was immediately after the budget, and I said, what for? He said, for minimum pricing. Now, the government actually hasn't exactly said in specific terms that minimum pricing is not going to be proceeded with in England and Wales, but I'm very pleased that I've actually had it on the QT that minimum pricing is not going to go very far, very fast in England and Wales. That is extremely good news. But no, I'm not going to congratulate them because that's the sensible, that's the legal policy. We're still critical of them on their tax policy. I hope the message will actually, the penny will drop in Scotland too, that minimum pricing is and going to be found illegal and they should take it off the table.
Please explain minimum pricing, because I've tried to explain this story and it's difficult to explain to people who aren't familiar with it and aren't familiar with the business side of the industry, but please explain exactly what minimum pricing means, both to the industry and to the consumer.
Well, first, I think there's a strong objection to any government actually telling you what price you should sell your product at. We abolished retail price maintenance in the UK in the 1970s. This would be the only product where the government started reimposing a price. The other thing, though, much more seriously, is that minimum pricing can only be justified in World Trade Organization rules and in terms of EU trading rules by actually finding an exception, when that is for public health, for crime, or for social reasons. If you do that, and in fact the Scottish Government is basing it on the basis of health exception, public health exception, you will find yourself, therefore, with other governments around the world using the Scottish example to justify further protectionism against Scotch, because they don't like imports of Scotch. They're wanting to look after the domestic industry. Scotch happens, of course, to be a very high alcohol volume drink, 40% plus, which means that it is seen as, wrongly, but it's seen as, therefore, the unhealthy drink by comparison when the beer lobby says, you know, this is a healthy drink. So effectively, you will find other governments around the world actually excluding Scotch from their markets on the health justification, which has already been actually established, therefore, by Scotland. Let me emphasise, however, it will not be introduced. It will be found illegal, and we are very anxious and very keen to make sure that it is so found.
Would you be at least supportive of telling retailers that they can't sell below cost and do it that way instead of imposing a minimum price, but say they have to at least stay within, they can't use it as a loss leader to encourage sales of other products?
That is absolutely where we are. We believe very strongly, first, if we take the UK, that effectively there should be some revaluation of tax. There's no justification for taxing alcoholic drinks differently. We believe all drinks should be taxed at the same rate according to their alcohol content, and then a duty on the retailer imposed, which is you cannot sell below the tax plus the VAT attaching to that tax. So you have to have a floor price, because we do object to drink and particularly whiskey being used as a footfall attractor.
And it should be pointed out that the health problems with binge drinking are not linked to Scotch. It's not single malt Scotches that are being consumed in mass quantities by binge drinkers, either in Scotland or anywhere else for that matter, right?
Certainly. We don't think it is Scotch, which is the problem, and it's not being targeted, and the Scottish Government tell us, you know, they're not trying to tax Scotch. But they themselves have had to admit that if they introduced minimum pricing, 71% of the Scotch whisky market in Scotland would actually have to have their prices raised. I don't understand them, because effectively, if they're not looking to tax Scotch, why are they actually imposing a policy which would raise prices?
One other political question I've got to ask you about, because people are asking me to cover this, or at least to start talking about it, the independence vote next year for Scottish independence. Is the SWA going to take a position, or are you going to stay on the sidelines?
Our public position is, as a business, which is we must always exercise due diligence towards any new project and proposition. And we've made absolutely plain publicly that there are so many questions still to be answered, whether it's currency, monetary policy, overseas representation, membership of the EU, membership of the World Trade Organization. All these things matter to us. We have no answers. And I think, therefore, until we have answers, I think we should be extremely cautious about going down a road which we're uncertain about.
And since it's the government in Holyrood that's talking about minimum pricing, does that worry you that they might also come after you on taxes if they have the chance to impose taxes?
It's interesting, because I think if they had the opportunity to be themselves responsible for taxation, they might well actually introduce our policy of tax equals approximate taxation for all drinks according to the level of alcohol content. So we'd see it. But I think my own view, and this is a personal view, is I do not think independence is going to be voted for by the Scottish electorate. It's the electorate which will just make that judgment, but currently I don't see it happening.
By the way, Hewitt says the SWA will fight any attempt to impose the so-called pound-a-bottle tax on Scotch whiskey. Some Scottish economists have proposed the idea as a way to keep more of the revenue from whiskey production in Scotland instead of sending it out of the country to the multinational corporations that dominate the industry. That's this week's WhiskeyCast In Depth, brought to you by Woodford Reserve. Discover Woodford Reserve Double Oaked, uniquely matured in two separate new white oak barrels, the second deeply toasted and lightly charred for a more complex dimensional flavor. Find out more at woodfordreserve.com. Be double sure. Drink responsibly. Woodford Reserve Double Oaked, Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey, 45.2% alcohol by volume. Woodford Reserve Distillery, Versailles, Kentucky. Let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with Highland Park's new Loki single malt. We heard about this one a couple of weeks ago when it was introduced in New York City. And it's a 15-year-old whiskey bottled at 48.7% ABV. The nose is complex with orange peel, ginger, peach, green apple, and a hint of vanilla. The taste is rich and equally complex with a continually shifting palette of orange, mild cinnamon, ginger, and hints of mango and grapefruit. The finish has tropical fruits and soft spices, and is long and full of flavor right up to the end. I'm scoring Highland Park's Loki a 92. My trip to India last month gave me the chance to pick up some whiskeys that don't usually make it to the U.S., including Teacher's 50 Blended Scotch. This one is a 50-50 mix of malts and grain whiskeys from 50 different distilleries in Scotland, and was originally bottled to mark the 50th anniversary of India's independence, hence the name Teacher's 50. It's 12 years old and bottled at 42.8% ABV. The nose has good malt and dried fruit notes, pears, orange peel, figs, honey, and a nice smoky touch to pull it all together. The taste is warming and rich at first, with a buttery texture that leads into well-rounded spicy touches of cinnamon and allspice, along with malty notes and touches of orange peel and dark chocolate. The finish is long and smooth, as the notes of allspice and orange peel fade away nicely, with just a touch of smoke. I'm scoring Teacher's 50 Blended Scotch a 92 as well. And finally, let's take a look at the Whistlepig Rye Triple One. The name comes from the 111 proof, 55.5% ABV, and 11-year-old age statement. The nose is strong and spicy with good notes of toasted oak and tobacco, wet leather, soft pepper, and honey. The taste is thick and chewy with good rye spice, toasted oak, and an intense cinnamon touch that doesn't overpower the honey underneath. The finish is long and spicy with cinnamon and rye notes, hints of honey, and dark chocolate underneath. I'm scoring Whistlepig Rye Triple One a 90. I've posted these tasting notes at the WhiskeyCast website, where you can search through more than 950 tasting notes for whiskeys from all over the world. That's also where you'll find WhiskeyCast HD and WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings episodes, the calendar of events, your voice, and links for our Facebook page and my Twitter feed. The address is WhiskeyCast.com, and my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com.
WhiskeyCast, proudly brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2013, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.